Hello everyone, Al here from Point of Insanity Game Studio, and for today's episode of Geekery in General, going to be doing another one of my episodes in the series about legendary weapons from around the world. Today we're going to be taking a look at some weapons from Chinese mythology and folklore. Before I begin, I do have to give the mispronunciation disclaimer. I do not speak a word of Chinese, so I will probably be doing a lot of mispronunciation in today's episode. Also, I only have a very, very minimal knowledge of the entirety of Chinese mythology and folklore. I mean, I know a little bit about Chinese religions from my experience in world religions. Because when I was working on my bachelor's degree in religious studies, in my world religions class, we did talk a little bit about Confucianism, did talk a little bit about Taoism. We didn't really get into any of the Chinese folk religions. And of course, Buddhism is also a religion that is very prominent in China. But these are not fields that I consider myself an expert in. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to do this episode is, and longtime listeners to the show, you'll remember that I've brought up before that I do have a background in Kung Fu. Now, unfortunately, when I was studying Kung Fu, I never had an opportunity to learn any of the weapons forms. I do remember seeing my instructor doing a form with a staff, and I remember seeing him do a form with two swords. And also, I know in his studio, he did have a pole arm, but I don't remember him ever seeing him actually use that weapon in a form. Now, Chinese martial artists have used a lot of different types of weapons. I mean, there is just a staggering diversity of weapons that have been used in Kung Fu. Also, one thing I do want to mention is, a lot of times when we're thinking of Chinese martial arts, a lot of times we will use the term Kung Fu as a broad catch-all term, but it should be noted that the word Kung Fu itself actually does not refer to a martial art. The term actually means craftsmanship or mastery. And you could theoretically be practicing Kung Fu in anything if you're trying to be a really good basketball player, then it could be said that you're practicing Kung Fu basketball. So usually when people are referring to Chinese martial arts, sometimes they'll use the term Kung Fu, but just because in the Western world, we're so familiar with using the term Kung Fu when describing martial arts from China, that's the term I'm going to use here. So as I mentioned, Chinese practitioners of martial arts have a wide variety of weapons. Some of them are very unusual looking, like there's the wind and fire wheels. I know there's a rope dart that's used in some styles. There's a weapon called the meteor hammer. Also, they're called like the deer antler knives, which are, again, very weirdly shaped knives that you would... Actually, I'm not even sure if I'd consider them knives, but really weird-looking weapons. However, there's four main weapons that are used in many different Chinese martial arts. They are the Jian, the Jiwan, the Chayang, and the Dao. Now, first, the Jian is a double-edged straight sword. It is sometimes called the Gentleman of Weapons. This sword is usually somewhere between the length of a short sword or a arming sword if we're going to compare it to European weapons. If you've ever seen the movie Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, the sword Green Destiny is an example of a Jian. Sometimes these swords are also called Tai Chi swords. Now, the blades commonly used in Tai Chi and Wushu performances often have thin, flexible blades. However, the swords long ago that were created for combat in mind had thicker, heavier blades. Next, the Jien, or the staff, is also called the godfather of weapons. As with many other martial arts, the Jian comes in a variety of sizes for both one-handed and two-handed use. And there's also the two-section staff and the more well-known three-section staff. Also, the two-section staff you might think would be similar to nunchucks, but it's actually more similar to a flail because it's a longer pole and there's a shorter section connected with a chain. So like I said, it's actually more akin to the flails that you see in depictions of Egyptian pharaohs than it is to nunchucks. Next is the Chiang, or spear. It is often called the king of weapons. It was commonly used in large-scale war and could be anywhere from 9 feet to 21 feet in length. The blade is usually leaf-shaped, and an elite soldier might have a horsehair tassel mounted around the base of the spearhead. Now, this tassel actually served two purposes. First, it could help confuse the opponent by drawing his attention away from where that head of the spear was. And it also was believed to help stop the flow of blood from down the shaft of the spear. Because, of course, after you stab someone, that blood's going to start to, again, go down the shaft, which could make the weapon slippery or sticky to hold. And finally, the Dao. It is sometimes called the Chinese broadsword, but it's actually more like a saber. It's a single-bladed sword with a slight curve to it. Sometimes the back of the tip was sharpened, which would allow for it to be used in thrusting attacks as well as slashing and chopping. The guard of the sword curved up, so it looked a little bit like a cup or a dish, and this actually had a couple of purposes. First, while the sword was sheathed, this would help prevent rain from getting into the sheath and rusting the blade. Also, since it was cupped like that, it would help prevent blood from getting onto the user's hands. Again, similar to what we were just talking about with the spears. The Dao could be used alone, with a shield, or in pairs. Eventually, it replaced the Jien as the primary sword on the battlefield, which caused the Jien to become the sword more associated with scholars and aristocrats. So I'm not sure, but I'm wondering if that's why the Jien eventually became known as the gentleman of weapons, because it became associated with these more people you would think were more upper class, more sophisticated. Well, the first weapon from Chinese culture and folklore I'd like to talk about is the Green Dragon Crescent Blade. This weapon is a gungdao, which means reclining moon blade. This is a pole arm with a curved blade and for the head, and it has a hook or spike on the back. So this could be used to catch an opponent's weapon. Now, I'm not sure if it was ever used to try to pull someone off of horseback, because I know European halberds often had a hook in the back for that purpose. Now, according to legend, the Gungdao was invented by a general named Guan Yu during the 3rd century, Common Era. He was believed to have been a physically imposing man with a great beard. However, there is some debate as to whether he would have actually used this weapon, because it does not appear in historical records until around the 11th century. This is supported by the writings of a historian named Dao Hongjing, who lived from the 5th to 6th centuries. According to this historian, Gong Yu fought with a pair of sabers. Another theory is that exceptionally heavy versions of this weapon were created not for the intent of being used on the battlefield, but rather as a way for a warrior to demonstrate his strength and skill. Gung Yu's weapon was the Green Dragon Crescent Blade, which is said to have been so heavy that only a man of Guan Yu's stature could use it properly. There is a weapon purported to be the Green Dragon Crescent Blade on display in the Purple Cloud Temple, a Taoist temple in the Wudang Mountains. But again, since the actual historical person probably wouldn't have had anything like this weapon, it's just most likely just a replica. So how would we stat this weapon out for D&D? Now, this weapon is also known as the Frost Fair Blade. It is said that when this weapon was fought with in the snow, it would have a layer of frost on it. So I would stat this as a glaive, but I would also give it the properties of a frost brand sword. Also, keeping with the tradition that this weapon was very heavy and you needed to be a person of great strength, I would recommend maybe you need a strength of at least 16 or 17 in order to use it. Next, the Sword of Lu Dongbin. Lu Dongbin was a scholar and poet who later became one of the Eight Immortals. In Taoism, an immortal is someone who achieved immortality through the use of alchemy or other means. In Lu Dongbin's case, he passed 10 trials, though these were not the thrilling battles we often see in other mythologies and that we associate with other heroic journeys. Rather, he had to prove himself to be pure and dignified. For example, in one of his trials, he bought some brass utensils from a merchant, but when he got home, he found out they were actually made of gold, so he returned them. Again, a test of honesty there. Now, I did an image search, and from the images I found of him, it looks like his sword appears to be a Jian. As for its powers, I would give it powers similar to a Dragon Slayer in terms of the bonuses it grants, but it would be strong against demons instead of dragons. His sword was also supposed to be able to dispel evil, so I would give it the ability to cast both Dispel Evil and Dispel Magic once per day each. Finally, I would have the sword make the wielder immune to fear and charm spells. And the reason for this because some of his trials required him to show no emotion. For example, in one trial, he was cleaning his home, and all of a sudden it was filled with ghosts and demons who were trying to kill each other. Lu was unfazed and continued his chores. One of the demons threatened to kill him, stating that Lu had killed him, the demon, in a previous life, and now it was his time for revenge. To this, Lu replied, "Go ahead and take my life, since I took yours in a past life. This is fair and square." His lack of fear or concern caused the demons and ghosts to disappear. Next is Ryu Jingu Bang. This weapon is a magic staff used by the immortal monkey king Sun Wukong. The name translates something to the effect of the compliant golden hooped rod. This weapon appears in a famous Chinese epic called Journey to the West, which is about a Buddhist monk named Tang Sanzang who journeys to India in order to obtain Buddhahood. Now, I've heard this story has influenced the famous anime Dragon Ball, and the Monkey King with his staff inspired the creation of the character Son Goku. However, I've never read Journey to the West, and I never really got into Dragon Ball, so I really can't say for certain how much influence is there. But I can certainly see where they're going with that, with the character of Sun Wukong being a monkey who uses a staff being similar to Son Goku. Now, in the story, Sun Wukong visited the kingdom of the Dragon King of the East Sea in search of a weapon worthy of his strength. He tried several weapons, but none of them met his standards. The Dragon Queen suggested to the king that they should give him an iron pillar that was taking up space in their treasury. Now, the staff was said to grow or shrink as the wielder desired. When Sun Wukong didn't need the staff, it would shrink to the size of a needle so he could store it behind his ear. As far as statting it out, I would make it a staff plus 3. I would also have the weapon inflict 1d12 damage instead of the normal 1d6 damage that a quarterstaff usually inflicts. And the reason for this is because, according to the story, the weapon weighed over 17,000 pounds. So I would imagine it would hit a lot harder than your average wood staff. However, for the user, it would seem weightless. But still, I would require at least about a 16, 17, maybe even an 18 strength just to use it. You could use the staff's extending properties to do a variety of creative things, like force open doors or prevent a ceiling from coming down on you. So again, that part I could see being limited only by a player's imagination and what a game master will allow. Now, I read that Sun Wukong also was said to have some abilities to control weather and also hold people in place with magic, but I'm not quite sure if those were powers that he had or if they were from the staff. Next is Hu Yi's bow. This bow belonged to a man named Hu Yi. He is sometimes pictured as a god, sometimes a demigod, and sometimes a mortal. His bow was said to be made from the bones of a tiger, and his arrows made from the tendons of a dragon. He was said to be a hero who would aid mankind during times of trouble. One of the most well-known stories about him involves him saving humanity from the Ten Suns. In this case, Sun, S-U-N, like the bright burny thing in the sky. Now, according to legend, long ago there were actually 10 suns. Only one was allowed in the sky at a time. But one day, all 10 decided to go out at once. This made the earth unbearably hot. So Hu Yi wanted to prevent the world from burning up, so he tried to reason with the suns. But they taunted him and they wouldn't listen to him. So he shot 9 of them down. He also was said to have fought various other monsters on behalf of mankind. So I would make his weapon a plus 3 longbow, but give it unlimited range. So basically, if you can see it, you can make an attack roll on it with no penalties for distance, or I would say even cover. As long as you can see somewhat of the person you're trying to hit, they're not going to gain any bonuses for hiding behind something. Next, the Axe of Xing Tain. This axe was used by a god whose name means opposing heaven. He fought on behalf of Yandi, the Flame Emperor, against Huangdi, the Yellow Emperor. During the battle, Huangdi decapitated Xing Tain. However, Xing Tain kept fighting. Now, originally, I thought of giving this weapon an evil alignment, and that's because since he's opposing heaven, I first thought, well, he was probably some sort of evil deity. Now, I couldn't find much else about him, so I'm not sure if in Chinese culture, if Xing Tain is considered evil or not. I mean, it's entirely possible that Eastern and Western interpretations of evil can be quite different. Now, when I've talked about Hinduism, I've mentioned this in relation to the goddess Kali, where in Dungeons and Dragons, she's usually pictured as being chaotic evil, but for various reasons, I don't necessarily think Kali deserves to be slapped with an evil alignment. Well, apparently he is still celebrated in poetry because of his strong spirit and never say die attitude. So I would make that reflected in his weapon. First, I would make his axe a plus 4 battle axe. While I wouldn't allow it to give you the ability to fight even with your head cut off, I would allow the weapon to protect you from critical hits, so any critical hit on you just does normal damage instead of extra damage. And I would also allow the weapon to let the wielder fight until they reach negative 10 hit points. Though I think in some versions of D&D, they use the whole dying thing a little bit differently. So again, depending on which version of Dungeons & Dragons you're using, you might need to play with that idea a little bit. Finally, the Sword of Gao Jiang. I like this weapon because this is an example of another legendary weapon that actually exists. This sword appears similar to a Jian and was discovered in 1965. The weapon was found in a casket with a human skeleton. One of the things that was so remarkable about this weapon was that thanks to the airtight scabbard, the brass blade was untarnished and still sharp. In fact, one of the archaeologists even cut himself while handling the weapon. It is currently kept in the Hubei Provincial Museum. Now, thanks to the inscription on the sword, historians believe that it belonged to a man named King Gojian, the king of Yu from 496 to 465 before Common Era. And this was a time of great hardship for his kingdom. They were being oppressed by their neighbors, the kingdom of Wu, to the north. However, during this time, Gojian remained humble, eating food normally associated with the lower classes and remembering the humiliation that his kingdom suffered at the hands of their enemies. His army would eventually defeat the army of Sun Tzu, as in the guy who wrote the Book of War. It was said his army could intimidate their enemies before battle. Usually, he would have some of the soldiers in the front lines slit their throats in front of their enemies. Though, apparently, there is some debate as to whether these were actually fanatically loyal soldiers, or another theory is that they may have just been criminals who were sentenced to death, so they did this as their death sentence. Now, as far as the weapon itself, I would give it a +3 bonus, and since it's still in really good shape after all these years, I would make it immune to the touch of a rust monster. I would also give it the abilities of a Sword of Sharpness. I think it would also be interesting to give it the ability to cast some spells from the War Sphere. Now, the War Sphere is a group of priest spells from 2nd edition in the Tome of Magic. Again, I'm not really sure if it appears in any of the later versions of D&D, but these spells were meant to be used with the battle system rules, which was for large-scale combat. So I could see the sword having the ability to improve the morale of the troops and make them fight harder. Well, there you have it, some weapons from Chinese mythology and folklore. So with that said, I'd like to thank you for tuning into today's episode, and until next time, have a wonderful day. You have been listening to a production of the Eclectic Media Project. Please check us out on the web at www.eclecticmediaproject.com and on Podbean and iTunes. Find Scott and Chad on Twitter as well, at EMP_Scott and at ChadEMP. We are on Facebook at Eclectic Media Project. Visit our publishing arm at www.poigamestudio and follow them on Twitter at @poigamestudio. Thank you, and we look forward to bringing you more thought-provoking and enjoyable content.